Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman whose beat is, well, among other things, intelligence and more generally, the war for the free world, I'm very pleased to say, is our first guest. She is the senior national security correspondent for an outstanding outfit, John Solomon's Just the News. She brings to the job a series of accomplishments and experiences and posts in various other media outlets. Her name is Susan Katz Keating, and she's always a welcome guest here. Susan, thank you so much for joining us again. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here, Frank.
I wanted to talk with you about an important part of your beat, Susan, and you cover it very well, the Pentagon, or the military, more specifically, and what seems to me to be increasingly a wrecking operation that the Biden-Harris administration is waging against our men and women in uniform. I'd like to start by asking you about sort of this emphasis that is being placed on not just this whole critical race theory training and really indoctrination, but more generally this idea that diversity is now a key operational requirement. I had a conversation yesterday with an outspoken critic of that idea, Elaine Donnelly, and I'd be very interested in your thoughts, especially against the backdrop of this really remarkable appointment of somebody to be the diversity and inclusion officer for our Special Operations Command. What's up with that?
That's a great question. I think a lot of people want to know the answer to that, but it appears is that SOCOM is being asked to, you know, be part of this big push to politicize the military, and they hired a diversity chief. He was a diversity and inclusion chief, who, as it turned out, was not himself very inclusive in his postings on social media.
That's putting it mildly. What was he saying, for example?
He had posted a lot of anti-Trump memes and a meme making fun of Ted Cruz. So he had posted a meme that was juxtaposing Donald Trump, like, holding the Bible with a picture of Adolf Hitler doing a salute. And as you know, you just can't do that when you are in an apolitical position, such as the diversity chief.
Yeah, ostensibly apolitical position. Yeah. Well, to say nothing of working for the United States government, of whose picture you've just, you know, portrayed the former commander in chief. So, Susan, I gather he ran into a little difficulty, at least temporarily. What is his name and what's his current status? Because what's so concerned to me is the idea that you want anything but merit determining who is in our most elite military units is, well, anathema, frankly, but especially having the background that this fellow does. Is he out of the game permanently, but is somebody else going to have that assignment, do you expect?
These are unknowns. Now, he was brought to SOCOM's attention, shall we say, by the Twitter sphere and by others who were highlighting this. SOCOM claims that they did not know about these posts, so he was put on a temporary reassignment. So I don't know where that is. Nobody is saying what he's doing now. His name is Richard Torres Estrada, and he's apparently doing new duties while SOCOM investigates his social media posts.
One wonders what good can come of whatever it is he's doing, given this predilection, but we'll reserve judgment on that. But it is of concern, isn't it, that this is considered to be an important part now of the special forces that I guess you'd have to have handicapped people and, the transgender folks and who knows who all else represented in order to demonstrate that you have a diverse and inclusive operation, not an absolute meritocracy of the highest order.
That has actually been the strength of the U.S. military, is that it traditionally has been a very strict meritocracy. So, you know, people can go into the military and everything is made equal. You know, that has been our strength, that we look for the best of the best and we train everybody.
Equal opportunity. That is not necessarily that everybody gets equal treatment.
Well, right. But in theory, you know, when you go into basic training or your boot camp or whatever, they don't care if you've got a college degree or if you've been a star football player on your college team. You are expected to be trained to be part of this team.
True. And I don't mean unequal treatment. I mean that your skills, your capability, your intelligence, your work ethic are things that will determine whether you advance or not. Not that you're all going to be advancing, you know, like kids' football teams that all get medals or trophies, right?
Right. And it's just like, I think it's very disconcerting. I mean, this whole notion that, well, we have to have, like, do we have quotas? Like, do you have to have certain quotas for certain, you know, classes of people? So does that mean that more qualified individuals are not going to make, you know, they're not going to be part of the team? You know, it raises a whole lot of issues that makes the military sound more corporate than military.
Well, I'm not sure it's good for corporations either, Susan, to be honest with you. But this could be a difference between life and death, to say nothing of mission success or failure. And it's you said rightly that this has been a strength of the military, that it has put all these kinds of notions aside or simply not been encumbered by them. It's been an outfit that has proven over time to be successful, mostly because it's absolutely rigorous about its standards, and it has ensured that people who don't meet them don't, you know, rise to the top. Susan, you wrote about an investigation that the Pentagon launched just days after the Biden administration came to office, apparently evaluating charges of war crimes against Special Operations Command and also Central Command. What do we know about that?
We know very little, simply that the Pentagon Inspector General announced, as you said, within days of the Biden administration coming in, that they were going to do a review over war crimes reports and whether they were being handled correctly. And that these investigations would go into Afghanistan, they would go into JSOC, CENTCOM, Special Operations Command, and it just raised a whole lot of questions as to what exactly does this mean, and are there reports outstanding that nobody knows about, or are they on a fishing expedition? It's just it opens up a whole lot of questions that just haven't been answered.
Yeah. Well, it also raises the prospect that what is going on here is going to be more distraction, to say nothing of more damage done to the military, because it's not focusing on its mission, which is warfighting, which is keeping us safe, which is deterring our enemies. And that is extremely ominous, it seems to me. Susan Katz-Keating, thank you for what you do to try to cover these very important topics and get us the news as best you can, even when it's not entirely clear where it all leads. But I know you'll stay on the case, and I hope you'll come back to us with updates very soon.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by a man I've come to admire greatly for both his skills and the degree to which he has brought them to bear with great effect in a vital yet largely unacknowledged battle space in what I think of as the war for the free world, namely what's going on in corporate America that is contributing to the fundamental transformation of our country in ways that I believe are anathema to freedom-loving, patriotic Americans, and yet are inexorably moving our country away from the one that they love. and want to live in. His name is Justin Danhoff. He is the general counsel of a terrific organization, the National Center for Public Policy Research. He also is the director of its project on free enterprise, in connection with which he is representing, among others, shareholders in corporate shareholder meetings and board sessions and the like, warning against what our friend Steve Sukup has called woke capital, and the degree to which it is mutating, really, the way we do business in our country, to the detriment of investors, shareholders, and the public at large. Justin, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk with us a bit about your work, and in particular about an important new initiative that you've just helped launch, a website called StopCorporateTyranny.org. Thanks so much for joining us to talk about both.
Yeah, it's always nice to talk with you, Frank. I appreciate the time.
So let's talk a little bit about the context, and then we'll talk about this website resource, Justin. You've been at this for some time. You've been really in the trenches trying to help keep corporate America, well, neutral, I guess, in the public policy fight as a member of this Back to Neutral coalition. How bad is the problem, as you see it?
I mean, it's tremendous, Frank. When you think about, you know, dividing America into cultural lanes, the left took over, you know, academia and media, and in many cases, much of our, you know, religious culture decades ago, right? But it took them a long time.
A long march through the institutions.
That's right. And so what I see is the most recent march is through corporate America. And interestingly enough, you know, I've been at this for more than a decade, looking at the leftward lurch of corporations and, you know, just dissecting why that was happening, how it was happening, and then trying to reverse engineer that. And again, I've been at this for more than a decade. And for the first time last year, something very interesting happened. Gallup runs an annual poll, a very large survey of Americana. And for the very first time last year, corporate America was underwater with conservatives. Of course, I'm standing from my precipice saying, well, you know, why did it take you so long, conservatives? But conservatives have finally woken up to the fact that corporate America, not only are they not with you, they hate your guts. They're actively working against traditional American values, conservative values, and in many instances, religious freedom.
Now, just to be clear, Justin, this isn't true of all corporations or their boards, but the trouble is many of them are now throwing in with this sort of woke capital idea, and they're, some of them at least, insisting that everybody else get on board with their program too, notably this chap Larry Fink, who is using the power of his firm, BlackRock, to coerce compliance with his woke agenda. Is that right?
Well, that's right. I mean, and folks, you got to understand, when you see, you know, woke capitalism, when you see the term ESG, that's environment, social, and corporate governance, all this is cover for a liberal policy or political initiative. That's all that it is. It's a smokescreen. And it's advancing liberal policy through corporate America. And look no further than one of the biggest debates on Capitol Hill right now, Frank, that's the Equality Act. Do you realize 400 of America's largest businesses are lobbying in favor of the ill-named Equality Act, which would do a couple things? It would eradicate women's sports, for one thing. It would eradicate women-owned businesses for a second thing. And thirdly, it would end the protections for religious freedom that have been enshrined through Supreme Court precedent and federal law for decades, and really since our founding to a degree. 400 major corporations have signed up to end women's sports and end religious freedom. And so that's why Stop Corporate Tyranny is so timely and so important. And that's why we've got a strong coalition of, you know, conservative movement leaders, you know, former business individuals, academics that are all lined up to say, hey, you don't belong in the culture wars. You have a duty. And that duty is a legal one, by the way, to your investors. So go make the best product, go make the best service, because that will increase the shareholder value for your corporation. But these culture wars, you don't have a place. And that's why we're saying, we're standing up and saying, stop.
This idea of, you know, stay neutral. You don't have to associate yourself necessarily, though it would be nice, with pro-American sort of public policy issues, but just stay out of these affairs if that's not what you're in business to do. And I think you're absolutely right. They're not in that business and shouldn't be. So tell us a little bit more about this website and what people can find there, stopcorporatetyranny.org, Justin Denhoff.
Yeah, so there's a couple things. First of all, there needs to be a broader education on what woke capital and ESG is. So we have some foundational resources for you to get up to speed on just exactly how the left is weaponized in corporate America. Because a lot of folks will see something happen like the headline, right? Like Coca-Cola tells their employees to be less white. Bank of America debanks their own gun clients. You know, Nike pulls a Betsy Ross tribute shoe. They see the headlines, but they're scratching their head over, how did that happen? How did we get to this space? So the first thing it does is educate Americans on how we got to this place and what is behind the veil of ESG and woke capital. So that's thing number one. But then item number two is we're going to have constant action items that Americans can take to reach out to corporate America, because the single biggest reason the left has been so successful in weaponizing so much of big business is a single word: engagement. A lot of conservatives reflexively think that, oh, I don't like what that company did, I'm going to boycott. Your boycott, I hate to tell you, is like a tree falling in the woods. The history of conservative boycotts is the history of an epic failure. It's never worked once, so it's not going to work this time. And it's never worked for the left either, because they don't do it. They engage with businesses, and that's how they've been so successful. So we're going to give you tools on and teach you how to reach out to corporate America so that they know there's another side. Because right now, again, conservatives just, you know, we have this inclination we're going to divest our money, we're going to boycott, and it's never worked. So we're teaching you how the left has been so successful. And again, if they're hearing from the left and they're hearing from the right, they may decide just to take the off ramp in the middle and get out of the culture.
Stay neutral.
And go back to what's germane to their business.
Talk just a little bit, if you would, Justin, about your own form of engagement. You say you've been at this for 10 years. I know it's often been a lonely battle, but you've done some really signal work in trying to engage corporate boards and management with, you know, a different view. And what are the lessons you've learned over the period that you've been doing that, and how can people help you do it?
Yeah, it's really been a fun ride, frankly. It's what we have done at the National Center and through the Free Enterprise Project, which I direct, is we have bought up shares of stock in the worst of the worst woke companies in America. So we own stock in, you know, Amazon, Facebook, Netflix, and the like, because we want to engage with them as shareholders. When we started this project a little more than a decade ago, we looked at who were filing shareholder resolutions with companies, right? And you may think that's a little mundane, but guess what? We noticed it was far left groups like, you know, PETA and Greenpeace, the Sierra Club, the SEIU, and Jesse Jackson. And then we noticed that there was some quote unquote mainstream liberal groups like investment houses that were leaning left that were engaged in this. We saw zero groups on the center right, zero, engaging corporations as an investor. So that's just what we started doing. And look, we found tremendous success in this. I have, through my shareholder resolutions, given protection for conservative workers at major corporations representing more than 5.5 million American workers, that they now have a workplace policy that they cannot be canceled for being a conservative. Those are all through shareholder initiative.
Yeah, especially when we see the efforts the left is making to cancel or otherwise deprive people of their employment in some cases. This is the kind of work that often goes unsung, and it's vital. And I hope that people, Justin Danhof, will learn more, not only through the website stopcorporatetyranny.org, but also through yours at the National Center for Public Policy Research. Give us how they can find that and otherwise learn more about what you're doing and hopefully roll in to help.
Yeah, come to nationalcenter.org, reach out to me. I'm on Twitter at Danhof Justin, and National Center is still on Facebook and Twitter for the time being. So reach out to us in whatever capacity.
Justin, again, thank you for your time as well as the great work you do. I know you'll keep it up, and I hope you'll come back to us with updates soon. Next up, we'll speak with somebody else about related topics right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's time for our visit with Jeff Nyquist, one of the high points of our week here at Secure Freedom Radio. He goes by J.R. Nyquist. You can find his writings at jrnyquist.blog, as well as several terrific books, including The Origins of the Fourth World War, and most recently, The Fool and His Enemy. We value the chance to visit with him because he is, among other things, a great strategic thinker, deeply knowledgeable about what enemies, foreign and domestic, have in mind for us. And it's often chilling to hear, but it's necessary. Jeff Nyquist, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, as always.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start with a thesis that I propounded in my commentary today, Jeff, and that is that this latest shoe to drop from the Biden-Harris administration, namely an infrastructure initiative, is kind of proof positive, really, of what has been building ever since they came to office, namely a kind of fundamental transformation of our country economically, in terms of energy, in terms of our freedoms more generally. And it seems as though when you put it in that sort of context, we really are in the midst of a Marxist takedown of our country. I wonder if, A, that's the agenda of Marxists taking down our country, foreign and domestic for that matter, and whether you agree that this is what's afoot.
Well, yes, they are trying to take it over. They're creating their enlarged democracy. And they're also sabotaging the economy and picking the pockets of the U.S. taxpayer to enrich their own friends, fronts, and organizations. If you've seen what's happened in California, look at what contractors are enriched in terms of the Green New Deal. Look at who got the money. Look at the kind of political organizations that suddenly are flowing in money. How is it that the left is able to finance themselves on public money, where the right is strangled of any resources of money at all? And it's sort of game on. Let's plunder the country. Let's weaken the country. Because what's really happening is, we can't even sell bonds. We have our own Fed buying U.S. bonds. We've got this quantitative easing. It's really bad. I mean, look at the stock market bubble. Look at the real estate bubble. You telling me these things are really worth this? The inflation that we've created has to go somewhere, and the destruction of full inflation is going to come one way or another. And the weakening of the dollar is a weakening of the U.S. military, because if we can't afford to maintain our nuclear arsenal and our navy, we're not going to be able to defend anybody.
Right. We are looking, I think, at a distinct possibility that the cumulative effect of this immense money printing exercise that the left has underway is that we will watch the currency of the United States, the dollar, cease to be the reserve currency of the world, with horrific knock-on effects if that were the case.
Well, that's one of the chief objectives long-term of Beijing and Moscow, is to cause the fall of the dollar, because they've already been talking about a basket of currencies or whatever, a new currency to replace the dollar.
Cryptocurrencies, yeah. I'm not sure it's a long-term project any longer. I think they think this day is coming, and another $2 trillion being printed this time around for whatever it is for infrastructure is just, I think, going to further accelerate that process. Jeff, I wanted to ask you, with all of that going on inside the United States and the possibility that this thing may go from a kind of soft coup to a very violent one shortly, particularly possibly if this Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis winds up with an outcome the left does not like, which seems a distinct possibility given the facts, we may see Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and other organizations affiliated with them, and, oh, by the way, the Chinese Communist Party, taking to the streets in earnest once again. We've had a little bit of a foretaste of that recently, but it may kick into gear in a big way. Sam Faddis, one of our other duty experts here, you know well, is very much of that view. Do you think that's in prospect?
Oh, yeah, there's danger of it. I mean, look, they consider what they did last summer successful. And then there's the double whammy of the Chinese virus and the vaccine. I mean, what you have, though, with the left and the way they're doing this is that they're headed for a kind of fiasco. If you look at everything they're doing, yes, it helps Beijing and Moscow. But in the end, there's no sense in a long-term policy and behavior in terms of being Democrats or the left in America. There's no long-term sense of their actually being able to sustain what they're doing. It's going to blow up in their faces.
But isn't that the problem? I mean, the worse the better, as I think it was Lenin said, you know, when it blows up, they think that that will cement their rule, that they will have achieved the destruction of the nation that they loathe and be able to govern it as they wish. It generally doesn't work out well for the revolutionaries, I think, but it's really hard on the country in the meantime. Jeff, is that not the prospective outcome that we should expect here?
Yeah, it's going to be something like that. Of course, what they're going to do is they're going to blame Trump. You know, they're going to try to do that for everything. But the country is going to lose its patience. First, the vaccine is going to be a fiasco. The economy is going to be a fiasco. The foreign policy in terms of him standing up to Russia is going to be a fiasco. His trade policy with China is neither here nor there, because he's holding on to some of Trump's measures, not fully satisfying the Chinese. Why he's doing that, it's an interesting question. And it's like he's doing everything possible to make things worse, whether this is incompetence or a mix of trying to, you know, drive this leftist agenda in a way that's not going to cause a right-wing reaction. It's hard for me to read it right now. Maybe in a month or two, we'll be able to understand what the thinking is. But, you know, thinking is the operative word. I don't know that these people know how to think.
Well, if my thesis is right, and I hope I'm wrong, needless to say, and I certainly wouldn't want to discount the possibility of incompetence, but I do think that if the idea is a wrecking operation to fundamentally transform the United States, that may well best fit the facts that we're seeing at the moment. But Jeff, let me pivot quickly before we run out of time with you, because you've touched on foreign policy, you've touched on Russia specifically. You're tracking some movements of troops by the Russians and by their proxies, perhaps, in Belarus that are quite ominous. Tell us what you see happening, and might it have something to do with the distractedness at best and at worst the unraveling of this country at the moment?
Well, yeah, the weakening of the United States with Joe Biden being president, and his hollow kind of threats on Putin is really, we've discussed it before, has helped Russia, has helped Putin, I should say, in trying to get past the internal crisis Russia's going through. These troop mobilizations of Russia and Belarus partly on the border of NATO, but mostly on the border with Ukraine, indicates something is going to happen. they're going to annex part of Ukraine is what, you know, a lot of people in Europe are thinking, that there's going to be a move on Ukraine coming in the spring. And this is a very serious moment in European history. NATO really doesn't have the wherewithal. If they try to interfere and stop the Russians, I mean, this buildup in the new Russian tanks and the helicopters and the weapons Russia has, NATO is behind. I don't think NATO can really cope with it. Maybe they can. You know, the military balance is very complicated, and we don't understand how some of these weapons will work in practice. But it's a very dangerous moment.
Dangerous in the sense that it's likely to result in a short-term victory for Putin, should he set his sights on chewing off another piece of Ukraine. Also demonstrating the inability of the West to do much about it, even if they wish to. And then there's the possibility of, as I understand it, some action against the Baltic states as well, which are, after all, now part of NATO. What are you forecasting there, Jeff Nyquist?
I don't know. I mean, I don't see the deployment so far in the Baltic states is one motorized division. More than normal, but we could see more mobilizations. I mean, I'm not getting a minute-to-minute report, but the real buildup is really on Ukraine. And there's this strange talk about Turkey and Azerbaijan threatening Armenia, which is, you know, I'm very skeptical about that. I don't know really what's going on there. It does all help Putin domestically, though, what I can't help noticing.
Mm-hmm. And definitely would tie up a lot of attention and perhaps resources as well for the West if suddenly in the midst of, as we've talked about, domestic turmoil here, but the possibility of a lot more of it there or in parts of Europe at least, amidst this coronavirus pandemic, not least, as it seems to be resurfacing in earnest with some new strains. So Jeff Nyquist, as ever, you've introduced a lot of food for thought, and some of it is very grim indeed. Some of it we clearly don't know the full dimensions of yet, but we will be watching it closely, as I know will you. And I appreciate so much your visits with us each week, as well as the work that you do between times at jrnyquist.blog, a resource that I really commend to our listeners as a great vehicle for informing yourself about the challenges we're facing as a country, and some good thinking by Jeff about what we best be doing about it as well. Jeff, thank you again for your time today and for the great work you do. I know you'll keep it up, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week. We'll talk next with Robert Spencer about developments from the jihadists and how they're tied in with the left as well in a red-green axis. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back, and a special welcome to one of my favorite guests. He is Robert Spencer, the director of an absolutely indispensable online resource, Jihad Watch, which is a product of the David Horowitz Freedom Center, where he is a Shulman Fellow. He's the author of, well over a score of books, including the New York Times bestsellers, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam, and The Truth About Muhammad. He is also the author of a book at the Center for Security Policy Press, I'm proud to say, Mass Migration in Europe, a Model for the U.S. Robert, it's good to have you back in the house virtually. Welcome. It's good always to have a chance to catch up with you.
Always good to talk to you, Frank. Thank you.
Well, speaking of migration, one of the things you've been covering, Robert, is not just migration of, jihadist elements, Sharia supremacists, if you will, in Europe, but also those trying now to get into our country through the border that Joe Biden has thrown wide open. What do we know about both the nature of some of these folks and whence they come.
Just recently, some people from Syria and Iraq were apprehended. And just a few weeks ago, some Iranians were apprehended. Neither of these stories are new. There is, as a matter of fact, at the border, among the border police, a whole classification of people, OTMs, other than Mexicans, people who are often from majority Muslim countries, often from jihadi hotspots, who pose as Mexicans and cross the border with the general influx. Obviously, these people are coming in this way because they have nefarious intent.
Presumably so. They now have the door open to them to come in the front door, though, as well, thanks to one of the other decisions that Joe Biden took early on to end Donald Trump's very sensible policy of preventing people from countries that we could not properly vet who they were, what they were coming for, and so on. And the countries you've mentioned, Syria, Iraq, and Iran, I believe, are all on that list. But the question that arises, Robert, and you've written about this in your terrific book about mass migration in Europe, we know that at least some of these people, especially those coming in surreptitiously, have to have a red flag flying here because they likely are jihadists. And sadly, we had an incident recently in which someone who came from Syria, albeit at a very young age, but who nonetheless marinated in this sort of Sharia supremacist thinking and practices of his community once he and his family got here, again, from Syria, engaged in an act of jihad in Boulder, Colorado, though you wouldn't necessarily know that's what he was doing from most of the reporting about it. Tell us what went on.
No, it's been kind of systematically covered up, even down to his name, which has been reported as Alyssa, as if it's akin to the common name for women in America. But actually, it's Al-Issa, and that's how he himself spelled it, with a space between the Al and the Issa, on his Facebook and Twitter account, where you can could find, although they were immediately scrubbed, but some people caught some screenshots before that and saw that he was saying you have to obey Muhammad and so on. And also the Target itself has advertised, the supermarket that he hit has advertised itself as the premier stop in Boulder, Colorado for kosher food. So it all starts to add up and make it very clear that this is somebody who took Muhammad's injunctions to wage jihad against unbelievers and particularly against Jews, unfortunately, quite seriously.
And literally. And followed the practices of the perfect man towards the Jews, which a number of cases involved personal decapitation, as I recall, of large numbers of them.
Yes. 600 to 900.
Yeah. Let me turn to one other piece of this, because as you describe what's going on here, Robert, both with respect to people coming into this country and doing us harm and people who are in this country doing us harm in the name of Sharia, we are being told by our law enforcement agencies, the FBI notably, and now, increasingly, the intelligence community as well, that the real threat this country faces is from domestic terrorists or violent extremists, if you will, that are actually white supremacists. Some of them are seemingly best identified as Donald Trump supporters. Would you give us a little bit of the pedigree of this term violent extremism and the project of countering violent extremism? How, in short, did we get to this point where we're clearly being deflected from some of the problems you've described and that should be obvious to everybody to something that's not so obvious?
The Countering Violent Extremism program came out of the Obama administration's decision in 2011 to drop all mention of Islam and jihad from counterterror training. And they adopted this catch-all term, extremism, which is extremely insidious because anybody can be labeled an extremist. As a matter of fact, the far-left hate group, the Southern Poverty Law Center, that smears foes of jihad terror, including you and me, Frank, they call us extremists. And this is just opening the door to having the counterterror measures be directed against people who simply dissent from the leftist agenda rather than people who are actually terrorists. And that's what's happening now when virtually anyone who commits a crime who is a white American is labeled now a white supremacist, like the fellow in Atlanta who shot up a nail salon because he was troubled by whatever kinds of sexual perversions or fantasies, and he's classified as a white supremacist, and it's an example of hatred against Asians since they were his victim. The idea that race had anything to do with that is entirely inaccurate, but it's everything is now an incident that is being used in an opportunistic manner to portray all white people or all Trump supporters at very least as being violent extremists. Terrorist.
Yeah, it fits a narrative, in other words, and is weaponized for political warfare purposes. Robert, let's drill down just a minute on what you just described as the leftist agenda, because I think it would be surprising to people, maybe not in this audience, because we talk about it with some regularity, but certainly the American population writ large would, I think, be astonished to discover that people on the left, who typically are secular, to say the least, if not downright hostile to religious practices, might be making common cause with people who are fervently religious, as they see it, insofar as that they are devotees of Muhammad and adherents to Sharia. Islam's, you know, a doctrine that commands its followers to engage in jihad. What's up with that connection? And is that part of the leftist agenda of which you speak?
Yeah, it's part of, I think, self-hatred that the left has embraced to a tremendous degree. That is, hatred of America, hatred of the West, hatred of Judeo-Christian civilization. So you have Islam that historically has been the enemy of Western civilization, has waged jihad warfare against Europe ever since the beginnings of Islam. And you see that they have a deep ideological kinship based on the common hatred of traditional Judeo-Christian civilization. I think that leftists are being naive in thinking they can ride this tiger when nobody else has been able to in history who has allied with them. But, well, maybe they'll find that out.
Yeah, well, they wind up getting eaten, I think, is the historical experiences you have documented in your fabulous book about jihad, which really chronicles the experience, a lot of hard experience people have had trying to contend with it, let alone, you know, manipulate and bend it to their will. Robert, let me ask you about one other piece of this. As you are reflecting on where we find ourselves, is there any doubt in your mind that the Biden administration is pursuing this leftist agenda, as you've described it, a sort of red-green axis, marriage of convenience, call it what you will?
No, there's no doubt whatsoever. The Biden administration has indefatigably pursued policies that are in line with the policy goals of the Muslim Brotherhood apparatus in the United States, the Muslim Brotherhood linked groups like CARE, ISNA, and the others. Meanwhile, the border crisis is obviously weakening national security and making it easier for our enemies to take advantage. All this lays right into the Brotherhood agenda as well as the global leftist agenda. And so the red-green axis is at an apex right now.
Yeah, frightening. Robert Spencer, we have to leave it at that. Thank you for your time today and for being a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, among your other distinctions. We look forward to talking with you again very soon, and I hope we will have a chance to talk with the rest of you again on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.